The views and opinions expressed here are those of the guests and are not the official position of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
One of the most remarkable aspects of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is its unique history. Throughout the world, great stories from faithful church members have only added to that history. This program shares some of these incredible stories of faith, perseverance, hope, and inspiration. You're listening to Legacy. I'm your host, Nathan Wright. Throughout the world, Brigham Young is more widely recognized than the prophet Joseph Smith. Year after year, the pioneer leader is listed among the most influential Americans. Although the name Brigham Young is widely recognized, the man himself might be listed among the most misunderstood. In studio today, to help us better understand this enigmatic leader, are Chad Orton and William Slaughter. Chad and Bill, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Why don't you just take a moment, each of you, and introduce yourselves.
Okay. This is Chad Orton. I'm an archivist with the LDS Church Historical Department. Been there for a number of years. Currently, I'm working on historical site guides. So when you go to the various church history sites, we'll be telling the same story and hopefully the right story.
Excellent. Thank you. Bill.
I'm Bill Slaughter. I work for the LDS Church Historical Department also, where I work with Patron Services, heading up their consultation efforts and working with the Global Initiative team. My area of expertise has been as a photograph historian. This is a second book by Chad and I, the first one being Joseph Smith's America. And we're happy to be here today.
Excellent. And I haven't mentioned yet the reason we're here and what we're discussing today is your book, 40 Ways to Look at Brigham Young. Can I just ask, first off, why the number 40?
It's as high as we can count.
It's as high as we can count. And No. Do we admit how we got this number, the real reason, and then the one you put in the introduction?
Yeah.
We decided upon 40. We had 50. We had 60. We had 30. But actually, the idea for this, the concept of the book, was stolen. No, not stolen. It was poached from other books we had seen, and they used the number 40. And there is a more intelligent explanation of the number 40, which Chad will share.
You know, 40 anciently meant a lot. You know, we talk about that Christ went out and he fasted for 40 days, 40 nights. We don't know if that's numbers exactly or if that meant that he fasted for a lot of days. It rained for 40 days, 40 nights. Alibaba and the 40 thieves, these are just terms that are used to mean a lot of something. So when we settled upon 40, it was with the idea that there are a lot of ways to look at Brigham Young. And as Bill said, we really had to struggle to get it down to 40 because there were so many more ways that we wanted to include, but we weren't able to.
I don't know. 40 ways just seems to work. 40. It's not too much.
Rolls off your tongue, too.
Yeah. There you go.
Good. And that was what I was alluding to, is the ancient use of the number 40, which I think is an interesting number and a good use for this book as well.
There you go.
So the first chapter of your book is titled A Life of Quiet Desperation, and you quote David Henry Thoreau. Let me just share with our readers what he said. It was in his first Walden essay entitled Economy. He comments that most men are slaves to their work and enslaved to those for whom they work, and concludes, the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. What is called resignation is confirmed desperation. So you use this quote to describe the early years of Brigham, but in terms more than just economic. Can you explain that a little bit to me?
You know, one of the things, and we use that quote kind of to focus upon resignation, that Brigham had felt like he was resigned to a life that he had to lead in so many different ways. He had been raised in grown up in somewhat poverty. He was able to raise above it by becoming a skilled craftsman, skilled carpenter. But he hadn't raised his lifestyle much above what his parents
were. And that's not to say he lived a bad life. He lived probably a pretty normal life for life on the frontier.
He was living the life that the vast majority, 90, 95% of Americans were living at the time. And most of the Americans were just, this is our life. We are going to live this.
Very simple and just very, the okay
humble,
with
humble
it.
Beginnings.
Humble beginnings. But for Brigham, there was always something, and I think the phraseology said there was something in my back of my mind that said there was more to life than this, that life consisted, there was always something more I was seeking. But for the first 30 years of his life.
Now, and remember that, the first 30 years of his life. So he. Keep going. No, keep that number in mind.
In that day and age, that's fairly approaching, middle age, because most people don't live much past, 70. He's middle aged thinking there's got to be more to life than what I'm experiencing. I'm happy. I'm married. I've got a loving wife. I've got some children.
But there's something.
But there's something that I am missing. And I don't know what it is, but there's something that's just gnawing at me.
Are we going back to another ancient 30-year-old here?
Well, the idea of 30, again, is not any numerology or anything like that. But that's when Brigham finds the church and converts, finds the gospel, I should say. And 30 is – you're well on your way in life. That's quite a time to be making a really revolutionary change in one's life. He's going really, like you say, from a pretty humble life. He knows his life. He knows what comes and goes. He knows his neighborhood. He has a good enough reputation to maintain a living. But in that desire, he's looking for something more. He found it in the gospel when it came to him. And in embracing that the gospel, he changes his life completely. 30, people are kind of entrenched. And that's one reason we used this quote, is this quiet lives of desperation. Thoreau basically says, people need to live life in a way that they're noticing what's going on. They know that they examine their life. And Brigham does that very much. And I don't know that he had read Thoreau ever, but the fact is he was living that life where you don't just default to desperation.
And Brigham, as he's growing up, I think the story is well told. He only had like 11 days of formal education. But he spends a lot of his time studying the world around him like he's going to school. He studies how to the farm life. His mother is sick at an early age. He has to learn domestic skills. One of the stories I love is he'd frequently get up in conference in later life and sit there and say, I wish I could tell you women, how to do these things so you don't burn your bread, so you don't have the problems that are.
And I know what I'm speaking of.
Because I've done it before. Yeah, he knows what he's speaking of. With Brigham, there's something there, and when the gospel comes, and we see this not only with Brigham, but we see it with so many saints in the early day. We see it now with many people who join the church, that their lives have required a complete change of who they were almost overnight. And in Brigham's case, it was a dramatic.
This is a man who's going to – he's not sitting back doing his carpentry working, thinking, someday I'm going to make hundreds and hundreds of speeches and they'll be known throughout the world for good and bad. I mean, he was in every aspect pretty unprepared for what would happen the rest of his life. In the humble beginnings, not given to public pronouncement. I wouldn't even say he was particularly charismatic in the sense that that Joseph and others have been. But there was a training in his practical way of executing life, the way of how do you get things done, How do you organize yourself? How do you take care of the needs of others? You know, when mom's getting sick, you do what you have to do to have to, for her, for to make life keep going. So there, you know, he didn't have the classical training.
Yeah, you can see in Brigham's upbringing, these taking care, learning how to do things on his own, that the Lord is preparing him. There are other things that Brigham has to learn after he's risen to leadership. You know, Bill talked about, you know, he's not prepared to give these speeches. I mean, Brigham readily admits, even to this dying day, that he's afraid to get up and give a speech. There's just something, he gets nervous when he's talking. And he talks about that. On one occasion, he notes, he says, I was probably close to 50 before I was comfortable meeting someone who's famous. You know, I was afraid to talk to these people. And that's just a Brigham. We don't
yeah, you
envision.
Never think, you know, that he has fears just like the rest of us. And the idea of meeting somebody famous meeting the famous.
Exactly. He being probably the most famous man in the West.
Yeah.
So you both alluded to some of his childhood upbringing stories. Would you each tell a one or two, just maybe that is not as well known to our listeners? Someone mentioned the one about taking care of his mother,
I think, well, you know, he grew up in a household that was, you know, I use the word humble. Humble also means. Look, they were on the frontier, and life is one is hard scrabble. You're needing to get things done. When his mother gets sick, he is the one who, for lack of a better term, correct me, he's the nurse. I mean, he's taking care of the domestic needs as well as being the regular farm boy, being a hire. He's also taking care. How do you get clothes have to be cleaned? Foods have to be cooked. The house has to be taken care of. His mother has to be taken care of. Somebody has to do that. And to me, in studying this and reading this, this is where that practical Brigham. There's more to Brigham than just being practical. He's a Renaissance man, which we'll talk about later. But the fact is, something has to be taken care of. Needs need to be met. Get in and do it. What we also learned is, you know, the modern CEO tends to be, in corporate America, tends to be hands-off, you know, I'm the guy who goes out and shake hands. Well, Brigham was very much a get dirty, take out the shirt and push the wagons, you know, put out the fires. And I think he learned that early on. That's what stands out to me.
Not only domestic, put out the fires, you know, he talks about all the things that he had to do as a youth to help his father. You know, they frequently moved. He was born in Vermont. They subsequently moved again and again. They kept going west. And Brigham had to spend a lot of time as a young man clearing forests so that they could plant. He had to, and they struggled. Stories that are told that he would have to, they made a living harvesting maple syrup. And Brigham, as a youngster, barely past 10, 12, would have to carry this maple syrup into town, which is about 12 miles away, where he would then trade it for goods and walk back. It wasn't an easy life for him. And then on top of that, you know, his mother was sick. She died when he was, you know, 16, at which time his father said, you know, Brigham, you now have your life ahead of you. Go ahead and make of it what you will. Prior to that, he'd been working to help his father, and now he was going out and seeking his own way in life.
You mentioned the way he could get things done even as a youth. One of my favorite stories is when he and his brother were left at home alone as the family went away to do something for a couple of days, and they just became so hungry because there was nothing in the house to eat. So he got the rifle off the wall, shot a robin, and made some stew. Yeah. And
he shot the first thing he could find. You know, but it also shows how hungry they were, that he would go out.
Exactly.
And, I mean, that would be what they were subsisting on, he and his family. So.
So Brigham was one of the earliest converts, baptized in 1832. What was his attitude toward religion prior to his conversion?
You know, Brigham, his parents were Methodists, and Brigham eventually reluctantly joined, became a Methodist. But he kept, you know, going back to this idea that there was something more in life that he was seeking. He thought religion should make you happy.
I think that's one thing. You know, that just, our chapter is called Seeker and Convert. I mean, he was seeking. He was actively – sorry, go ahead.
No, and, you know, he had been seeking for years prior to when – before he the missionaries arrived. He received the Book of Mormon. He had been looking at the idea that the people he knew who were religious weren't very happy. He's thinking religion ought to make you happy. That's the purpose of life.
Which would be a theme.
And he will come back to this again and again and again. He thought that religion ought to be not just a set of unused values that you talk about on Sunday, but ought to be an everyday way of life.
Your life, the way you act in your business, the way you act in your family, the way you act on Sunday, should all equal to the same person.
Which wasn't necessarily what his father showed him. Is that true?
That is correct. And I think you know. As Chad said, he thought religion. He found a lot of religious people not to be happy, and one of them was his own relatives. And I would say it was more than just not being happy. Some were downright mean.
And this was not just, you know, this family. I mean, he talks about that. You know, he couldn't like the Old Testament. He could only go so far on the Sabbath. He couldn't listen to music.
No dancing.
And no dancing anytime. This was fairly common with religion in America. This was an attitude that grew out of the Puritans, that this is what religion should be. And in some ways...
Serious business.
Serious business. In some way, Joseph Smith, when he introduced the gospel, he is introducing a view that is so contrary to what is being... held in America.
Could we say revolutionary?
Revolutionary. That would be a good word. That's what we're looking for. And in some ways, that's what Joseph and Brigham are alike, that they are both seeking for a happier, better way of...
You know, in Joseph Smith's America, that book, in the introduction, we talk about one of the things in reestablishing the gospel on earth is a gospel that gives one hope. It is the idea that there are positive possibilities for your individual relationship with Heavenly Father, as opposed to a sort of Calvinistic Puritan view that said, you better obey the laws fear of negative consequences. And Joseph very much teaches that you know, the ability – that there is hope in this, that life is more than surviving at the very most humble way. That life is more than just preparing food. Life is more than just looking out for – physically and financially for those you love, but there is an eternal purpose to all this. And yes, man is that he might have joy. And I think that resonated with Brigham Young in spite of his sometime reputation among some people that he was a grouchy old man. One of his many reputations that are contrary to the reality. So when Brigham is introduced, and he's seeking. When we said he knows that something is missing from his life, you know, he's living that life of quiet desperation, but he hasn't resigned to it yet. So when this appears on the horizon for him, it's something that he can embrace and wrestle with, and say, "Now this might do my life some good, and this has a possibility of all religions of being hopeful." Therefore, bringing happiness in the best sense of that word.
And see, when, you know, Brigham, you know, he was born in Vermont, but he ended up not too far from where Joseph Smith was. Brigham Young is 4 years older than Joseph Smith, and we know Joseph Smith experienced, you know, the burned over district, the revivals of upstate New York. Brigham Young also experienced those revivals. He went to those. He was also caught up in this experience.
As part of his seeking.
And, you know, not surprisingly, he would go to these meetings and he'd come away from thinking, what have I learned from here? And morals, nothing but morals, I think he said of Lorenzo Dow. The great preacher.
Well-known.
I haven't learned anything that would change my life and better my life. And what's interesting is, you know, he talks about religion. Well, the ideas that are taught him, he said, I couldn't have swallowed them as if they were greased over. There was no way I could swallow these. There were no way they could make me happy. I'd rather go into a swamp at midnight and try to describe what I'm seeing as try to describe and accept what I'm being taught. And it's not surprising that when the gospel is first introduced to him, when he encounters the Book of Mormon, he says, well, it's just like every other religion. I don't hold out any great hope for it. And so you talk about an early convert he was, but Brigham spent 2 years
wrestling
with these facts before he joined the church.
And I think that's probably the right word, is he did wrestle with it. He engaged it and looked at it and tried it on a little bit here and there and came to terms with it.
You know, he first liked, I like the religious aspect of it. I'm coming to accept I can understand the religion, these ideas that are being taught. But one of the things he was curious about, how did it affect the church? How was it affecting these people? Because he had seen that in religion and other aspects weren't affecting them positively.
You know, isn't that a question a lot of people have, is even all the time, if this is so good, how come these people are so pickle-faced, or how come...
Exactly.
You know, if they're so moody now, what were they like before? I don't know if this will. You know. So I think his questions were pretty legitimate, and at that age he's got the maturity to say, okay, it's got to work, or I'm not going to go there.
Yeah. And he curious whether everyday aspects of their life were being affected by it, not just Sunday. What is interesting is that after 2 years. Brigham said that what finally converted him, and I think this is a valuable lesson, he said there was a Mormon missionary came who Brigham said, I could easily out-talk, I could easily out-think, I had everything over him. But when he bore simple testimony, this simple uneducated man, that is when Brigham determined to become baptized. That is when the gospel, when it really entered into his heart.
And once he accepted it, and prior to his baptism, it says in your book that he pondered what effect it might have on his family and his friends, and he concluded that Mormonism was worth losing both.
Yes, he made that statement.
Now, that's a pretty, we tend, sometimes when we look at historical characters, we tend to just go over that and, oh, well, that's an interesting, over-the-top statement, but I don't believe that. I think he meant that with his heart and soul, that he did, more mature than, a 20-year-old or a 15-year-old. He realized that his actions have consequences, especially something as important as religion. And of course, we have the benefit of he never looked back. But we also know he brought a lot of people with him. So, but that is an important concept. He's saying, look, everything that's of value to me, this religion, which I believe to be the gospel, is so important. I'm willing to take a chance. I think that's a powerful statement that we can't easily overlook.
Yeah, and for his. Even though he took that view, his wife later joined the church, and he said, I'd never asked her if she would whether she would join. We talked about it, but what she was going to do with it. She later joined, as did most of his brothers.
Yep.
And his father is,
yeah,
as well.
They probably knew Brigham well enough that he wouldn't jump in without knowing what's going on.
Yeah, I think he was probably, okay, if Brigham's going to do it, there must be something to it. Let's at least look at it and give it a whirl.
Yeah, he was very, you know, like Joseph Smith, he was very studious. He spent a lot of time trying to study things and think things out.
So Brigham joins the church. How long after that does he become a missionary?
Right off the get-go.
You know, and that's one of the...
Now, go ahead. You may be about to say the same thing.
I mean, that's one of the things that impresses me about Brigham. And we see this change in him, that he is... I mean, it's almost overnight. You know, here in Salt Lake, they have the Lion House. You know, on there's a crouching lion, and most people have eaten there. They know of the Lion House rolls. But it reflects this attitude that comes over Brigham when he joins the church. The first thing he has to do is he has to roar and let everyone know about the good news.
And yeah, I think he's determined. That's always the word that comes through on, for me at least, is that, you know, he's determined to do all the things that he thinks are necessary to truly live this new religion that he's joined. And that partly what I mean by that is he's willing to do those things that are really uncomfortable for him.
Yeah.
And every one of us knows that we can always rationalize our way out of, I don't really like public speaking and da-da-da-da. He didn't flinch, he embraced those things.
The quote from page, 13. I wanted to thunder lest my bones should consume within me. So he felt the change. He had the passion, and it didn't matter what the comfort level was. He was going to do it.
I think that's absolutely right. And that's, you know, we assume, you know, Brigham has always been that way, but it was a change. He was a changed man and willing to grasp that change and go with it.
And, you know, and what's impressive about that is that, you know, I'm not sure, we don't know how many of his neighbors he converted that first time or what the end result was, whether it was a great experience or it wasn't, but that really didn't matter to Brigham because, you know, during the next few years, he would go after mission after mission, and many of these he would call himself on. He didn't wait for the prophet Joseph Smith or somebody else to say, Brigham, you need to go on a mission. He just said, I need to go out and spread the good word.
So he ended up in eastern United States, Canada, Great Britain, several different missions.
Yeah. Now, a lot of the missions aren't always, you know, there could be a few months or, you know, all the way to going to England for a couple of years when he was literally deathly ill.
You know, in section 126, the Lord says to Brigham, and I don't have the scripture in front of me, to the effect, you know, revelation of Joseph Smith, that Brigham, you no longer have to leave your family and go on missions. And, you know, a lot of people would say, why is this revelation here? Well, at that time, Brigham had been a member of the church for about 9 years, and he had spent more than half of his life on missions. You know, and these weren't easy. You know, part of what we don't understand is you go on missions. He would leave at the start of every summer and be gone all summer. Well, for someone who's dependent upon crops, the food that you grow, that takes a great deal of faith to leave your family.
Somebody's got to pitch in for you. Somebody's got to help take care of the family for you. Something's got to happen.
Something has got to happen there for him to do this. But he continually goes on these missions to spread the gospel, and he has a great influence, a great effect upon people. And, you know, and the other thing about these missions that I love is, like, when he goes on the mission to England, he's as poor as can be. You know, when he leaves, he said, my hat I made from an old pair of pants. I didn't have a coat. I took the blanket, you know, off the bed. But he's willing to do this even though things aren't ideal, even though things aren't perfect for him, because he felt that need to go forth and to preach the gospel.
And add to that, he was very sick. That sounds sort of underwhelming the way I put it. I mean, he was deathly ill.
When he goes to England,
yeah,
both he and Heber C. Kimball are deathly ill. They're with malaria, probably malaria.
Probably malaria from that area of Illinois. And people are asking them not to go, and they literally drag their sorry behinds across the country, and by golly, they made it.
Yeah, and one of the things is not only were they sick when they left, their family was sick, and the story I love is that as they're pulling out of Nauvoo in the wagon, Heber C. Kimball, who he's traveling with, who's also a good friend from New York, joined the church about the same time, says to Brigham, "Let's give him a cheer." And so they stop the wagon, and you read the account, it's very moving about how they struggle to get to their feet, and then feebly take their hat and wave it over their head and said, "Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah for Israel." And that had a great effect, I think, on them and also upon the families of those who watched it.
Since I work in video for the church, there's a great seminary video that depicts that scene.
Oh.
Very, very touching and very well done. This is such a great topic, and we've got such fascinating stories to tell. We're going to split this up into two episodes. Join us next time on Legacy for Part 2.